today with you as well. It is a small crowd today, and that's okay. I think we can worship well together, even like this. Those of you that aren't here, we miss you when you're not here, and so, yes, it is good to be here. Is that better now? As we were singing the songs during share time, I was blessed by the song of "What a Day That'll Be." I think we're all looking forward to that day. And as time moves on, we tend to look forward to it a bit more. What a day that'll be to someday leave this world. I think that will be the culmination of everything we know. It'll be the reward. It'll be the... That's what we're here for, is to experience that day with our Savior. Okay, as was mentioned in Dean's prayer, I am sharing a biography, if you will, of a person in the Old Testament today. I wasn't sure how to do this. It's a story we all know well. But I think it's well. It's in the Bible for a reason. And it's for us to read again and again and tell the story to our young ones and to our children and grow up hearing these stories. I think there's a lot of lessons to be learned from this story. The character I've chosen today is a man by the name of Joseph. And I think we all love the story of Joseph. We grew up with the story of Joseph. One of the things we remember as a child pretty vividly is the coat that he had. It was a pretty coat. Had a lot of colors on it, we're told. Joseph lived in a different culture than we do today. And there's some things happen in his life that we sometimes kind of scratch our heads. Like, what were they thinking here? We need to remember this was a very different culture. Middle Eastern culture was a lot different than what we experience today. However, I think Joseph experienced the same emotions, the same feelings that we do today. He was human, and his experiences must have been hard to understand sometimes, I'm afraid. Joseph, a man of character. When we think of someone with character, we think of a lot of good character traits, if you will, form a man of character. The story of Joseph is one that we're very familiar with. My goal is to share some of the experiences that Joseph had and see if we can benefit from them in our lives today, and I trust we will. Joseph was born to Jacob and Rachel. And if we think back to our devotions this morning on deception, you want to talk about deception. Jacob was the master of deception. There's multiple stories in the Bible in Genesis where he was part of deceiving someone, or he was deceived. It seemed he couldn't get away from deception. We know the story well. Jacob wanted to get married to Rachel, and Laban said, "Work for me 7 years and you can have her as your wife." And he did it. He did it willingly. He was deceived, and he ended up with the wrong woman. You talk about deception. That's a good one there. We know the story goes on, though, and he was given Rachel as a wife as well. That in itself is a problem in most of our minds today, if not all of our minds. Polygamy is one thing we can't quite wrap our minds around. How did that ever work at all? It had to come with its own set of problems, but we know that was the culture. And that was the story of Jacob and his wives. Joseph was born to Jacob and Rachel. He was Rachel's first child. It seemed as though Leah was able to bear children or have children. She had 4 sons, and Rachel, meanwhile, stood there and watched this and could not have any children. Frustrating and discouraging. Rachel got jealous, and as was custom in that time, Rachel gave her maid to Jacob in an attempt to have children. And Rachel's maid had 2 boys. Then Leah saw this happening, and so she gave her maid to Jacob. And she had two sons. Then lo and behold, Leah started having children again and had two sons and a daughter. All this time, Rachel was processing the fact that she didn't have any children. Finally, Rachel had a baby and called him Joseph. Later, Rachel got pregnant and had Benjamin, son number 12 for Jacob. But Rachel died during the birth of Benjamin. That gives us a setting where Joseph was born. I'm assuming Joseph's older brothers were quite a bit older than he was. My guess is Leah's first four sons were, I don't know, could have been 15, 20 years older than Jacob, probably, or Joseph, I'm sorry. Joseph was the first child Rachel had with Jacob. Maybe that explains Jacob's unhealthy display of favoritism. The Bible tells us that Jacob treated Joseph differently than his other sons. I would suggest it's probably because he was Rachel's son. And in his heart, Rachel was his bride that he chose. And so therefore, when she finally had a son or a child, Jacob naturally was attached to this child. Jacob's four sons from Leah were quite the characters. Reuben slept with Rachel's maid, and the Bible says Jacob heard of it. Doesn't say he did much about it, but he heard of it. And later, his blessings on his sons, this came up where his blessing for Jacob, or for Reuben, was based off of what happened here. And earlier, before Joseph, we also read how Simeon and Levi, they were sons 2 and 3, had treated Hamor and Shechem because Shechem defiled their sister. Simeon and Levi killed all the men of a town. The Bible also says Jacob was displeased with his sons for acting like this. So we can draw some conclusions here that Jacob had his hands full. He had some rebels of sons. He had multiple wives to keep happy. He had a lot of things to keep track of. All this to say, I think Jacob chose his beloved wife's firstborn son as his heir. And that is why he treated him with favors and a special coat we all remember. I also think Joseph as a young man already showed integrity. There was something in Jacob or Joseph's life from early on that was different. There was a pattern the sons of Jacob seemed to be following, and I suspect certain boys stuck together and learned from each other. Joseph was probably not born until these boys were quite a bit older, and possibly Joseph purposed to not live like his brothers. Also in Genesis 35, we see where the family of Jacob gave him all the idols and earrings, and he hid them under an oak tree. This was on the way back to Bethel. Then the family of Jacob moved into Bethel, back into the area he came from. Maybe Jacob cleaned up his act, quote, before Joseph was old enough to be as affected by these kinds of things. We don't know all these details, and we don't know for sure why Joseph was such a godly young man. But I think these things could all play into the life of Joseph, where he came at a time in this family where there was bad examples to observe and learn from. There was, when Jacob moved his family back into Canaan, there does appear as though there was a following of Jehovah God again. He put away the idols, and they set up an altar, and they worshiped like this. I struggle with a bit with knowing how to share this or where to go with it. We could spend hours in a story like Joseph's. But I invite you to turn to Genesis chapter 37. And I think I'm going to read the whole chapter there. There's quite a bit in this chapter. And I encourage you to follow along as I read it. Genesis chapter 37. I think this comes in where Jacob came back to Canaan. I'll be reading this from the New King James, starting in verse 1. Genesis 37, verse 1. Now Jacob dwelt in the land where his father was a stranger, in the land of Canaan. This is the history of Jacob. Joseph, being 17 years old, was feeding the flock with his brothers. And the lad was with the sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives, and Joseph brought a bad report of them to his father. That in itself was going to cause a problem with boys. If you have one, especially a younger one, that tattles on the older ones, that's going to cause problems. It just does. But I think Joseph saw things that were wrong, and the soft heart that Joseph had and his desire to serve the Lord and to do what was right, just it saw those things. And so he reported them to his father. Now Israel, this is Jacob, loved Joseph more than all his children because he was the son of his old age. Also, he made him a tunic of many colors. But when his brothers saw that their father loved him more than all his brothers, they hated him and could not speak peaceably to him. Now Joseph had a dream, and he told it to his brothers, and they hated him even more. So he said to them, "Please hear this dream which I have dreamed. There we were, binding sheaves in the field." There again, I think this was probably something that was common to them. They were working together in the field. "And behold, my sheaf arose and stood upright, and indeed your sheaves stood all around and bowed down to my sheaf." And his brothers said to him, "Shall you indeed reign over us? Or shall you have dominion over us?" So they hated him even more for his dreams and for his words. Then he dreamed still another dream and told it to his brothers and said, "Look, I have dreamed another dream. And this time the sun, the moon, and the 11 stars bowed down to me." So he told it to his father and his brothers, and his father rebuked him and said to him, "What is this dream that you have dreamed? Shall your mother and I and your brothers indeed come to bow down to the earth before you?" And verse 11 says, "And his brothers envied him, but his father kept the matter in mind." I think his father by this time understood that something special was happening in Joseph's life. Dreams like this usually carried a bit of meaning to them. I think it was more than just dreams like we dream at night sometimes. I'm not saying our dreams never mean anything, but we dream senseless dreams that don't make any sense sometimes. I don't think these were. I think they were clear vision in the form of a dream. And it says his brothers envied him. Then his brothers, in verse 12, went to feed their father's flock in Shechem. And Israel said to Joseph, "Are not your brothers feeding the flock in Shechem? Come, I will send you to them." So he said to him, "Here I am." Then he said to him, "Please go and see if it is well with your brothers and well with the flocks, and send back word to me." So he sent him out of the valley of Hebron, and he went to Shechem. Now a certain man found him, and there he was, wandering in the field. And the man asked him, saying, "What are you seeking?" So he said, "I am seeking my brothers. Please tell me where they are feeding their flocks." And the man said, "They have departed from here, for I heard them say, 'Let us go to Dothan.'" So Joseph went after his brothers and found them in Dothan. Now when they saw him afar off, even before he came near them, they conspired against him to kill him. Then they said to one another, "Look, this dreamer is coming. Come, therefore, let us now kill him and cast him into some pit, and we shall say, 'Some wild beast has devoured him.' We shall see what will become of his dreams." But Reuben heard it, and he delivered him out of their hands and said, "Let us not kill him." And Reuben said to them, "Shed no blood, but cast him into this pit, which is in the wilderness, and do not lay a hand on him, that he might deliver him out of their hands and bring him back to his father." So it came to pass, when Joseph had come to his brothers, that they stripped Joseph of his tunic, the tunic of many colors that was on him, and they took him and cast him into a pit. And the pit was empty. There was no water in it. We'll just stop and make a few comments here. We don't know, the Bible doesn't tell us why they were so far from home to feed the flocks. It could be assumed that these guys were involved in business and communities other than Hebron there. And perhaps they had some things going on based off of these characters of these brothers that they just as soon be a feather away from Jacob. So they took the flocks over here and just kind of put in time over here. We don't know why they were over there. But after a while, Jacob wanted to know how they were doing. And so he sent Joseph to see if he could find them. And they threw him in this pit. And then they sat down to eat a meal in verse 25. Then they lifted up their eyes and looked, and there was a company of Ishmaelites coming from Gilead with their camels, bearing spices, balm, and myrrh on their way to carry them down to Egypt. If you think back to who were the Ishmaelites, they weren't all that distant relatives of these men. Ishmael was a brother to Isaac, Abraham's sons. And so these were some relatives that were traders, obviously, and they saw them coming here on the way to Egypt. So Judah said to his brothers, this is son number four now, of those first four, "What profit is there if we kill our brother and conceal his blood? Come, and let us sell him to the Ishmaelites, and let not our hand be upon him, for he is our brother in our flesh." And his brothers listened. Then Midianite traders passed by, so the brothers pulled Joseph up and lifted him out of the pit and sold him to the Ishmaelites for 20 shekels of silver. And they took Joseph to Egypt. Then Reuben, obviously was not with them at this time, returned to the pit, and indeed Joseph was not in the pit, and he tore his clothes. And he returned to his brothers and said, "The lad is no more, and I, where shall I go?" So they took Joseph's tunic, killed a kid of the goats, and dipped the tunic in the blood. Then they sent the tunic of many colors, and they brought it to their father and said, "We have found this. Do you know whether it is your son's tunic or not?" And he recognized it and said, "It is my son's tunic. A wild beast has devoured him. Without doubt, Joseph is torn to pieces." Then Jacob tore his clothes, put sackcloth on his waist, and mourned for his son many days. And all his sons and all his daughters arose to comfort him. But he refused to be comforted, and he said, "For I shall go down into the grave to my son in mourning." Thus his father wept for him. Now the Midianites had sold him in Egypt to Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh and captain of the guard. That is the end of the chapter. And I'm convinced in these boys' minds, or these men's minds, Jacob's sons, it was the end of Joseph. They didn't kill him. They knew better than killing him, but they got rid of him. And they, life went on. They never heard of him. They didn't know what happened to him. They knew he left with the traitors, and that was it. Ruthless, cruel. I can't imagine the feelings of betrayal that Joseph went through as they pulled him out of the pit. Probably there was a hope in his heart, "They're taking me out." And then he realized they're selling him for money to these traitors. I can't imagine what this young man of 17 went through as he left those boys and the life he knew. And he was forced to go with these strangers to a land that he had never seen. I think his heart cried out to God because he recognized God as being God, and he had a sense of who God was, I think. Moving on in the story to chapter 39 of Genesis, we will move on with his story. I'm not going to read as everything from here on, but in chapter 39, verse 2, we see, "And the Lord was with Joseph, and he was a prosperous man, and he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian." I take comfort in those words, "And the Lord was with Joseph." The Lord did not forsake him. The Lord did not betray him as his brothers had. He was working for his master. And I think Joseph was cheerfully going about his work. I don't think he was long-faced and sad. When we gather Joseph's character, I think he was a pleasant person to be around. Then we read the story of Potiphar's wife and how she tempted Joseph. And when he didn't give in to her advances, she lied about him, what he did to her. and Joseph was thrown into prison. Once again, a cruel, cruel injustice. It's wrong. It's wrong. But what could he say? It was his word against hers. Not only that, the temptation she presented him with was a powerful temptation. Joseph resisted her. It took integrity on Joseph's part. I think Joseph didn't just decide that day that he won't sin. He purposed in his heart long before this day to do what was right. Self-control is an important factor in building character. Proverbs 25:28 says, "Whoever has no rule over his own spirit is like a city broken down without walls." When there are no walls, anything can get in or come out. Joseph exercised self-control, but in contrast, Samson used his body to gratify his own pleasures. Joseph ended up ruling on a throne, while Samson ended his life buried in a pile of rubble. Both men recorded in history, but we see the differences in their characters. In chapter 39, verse 21, we read again that the Lord was with Joseph. This time he was in jail, or in the prison. Once again, I think he was a pleasant man to be around. He was cheerful. He did what was right. And he found himself time and time again with responsibilities because of his character. Verse 21 reads, "And the Lord was with Joseph and showed him mercy and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hand all the prisoners that were in the prison. And whatsoever they did there, he was the doer of it." He basically took over this man's responsibilities and took care of everything. 23, it says, "The keeper of the prison looked not to anything that was under his hand, because the Lord was with him, and that which he did, the Lord made it to prosper." God had a plan, and it was still being carried out. He made friends in prison. You might say he met some powerful people there. Along came the two men that had upset Pharaoh. The butler and the baker ended up there because they had done something wrong. And we know the story how they dreamed dreams and Joseph helped them with the interpretations and how that played out exactly like he said. And he asked the chief butler, "Once you get out of here, you put in a good word for me. I don't deserve to be here." I don't know what was, I think Joseph wanted out, and I think maybe he was getting a bit impatient with his timing here. Come on, I'm made for more than being in here. I don't know. The Bible doesn't tell us those details. But what happened? When the butler got out, he forgot. Once again, Joseph could have settled into despair and said, "I'll never get anywhere. I can't do this. Why do I have to be here?" We don't read that that happened at all. 2 years passed, and Joseph was still in the prison, doing his job, doing it well. This time it's Pharaoh that has a dream. And the butler remembers his forgetfulness. He remembers Joseph. He said, "There's a guy in prison here that helped me out one time." We know the story. Joseph was called out. When he was called before Pharaoh, Joseph not only explained the dreams, but he also advised Pharaoh on a course of action and very humbly gave God the credit. In Genesis 41:38, "And Pharaoh said to his servants, 'Can we find such a one as this, a man in whom is the Spirit of God?'" What a display of character. It would seem as though in a matter of a day or two, he went from being in prison to advising Pharaoh what to do about his dreams, with his dreams. Pharaoh latched on to the godly character. He recognized something here that the other Egyptians didn't possess. By this time, Joseph was, we're told, 30 years old. When he was sold, he was 17. That's 13 years of confusion, perhaps. Why, God, why? We have our bad days. Sometimes we have our bad weeks, maybe even months, where we question why. But 13 years of false accusations, lies, deception. And one day, it was his time to shine, and his character was still intact. Finally, when he was 30 years old, he started serving Pharaoh. He was tried in the fire all these years, and he came forth like gold. Joseph advised Pharaoh to store up food because there was a serious, serious drought coming. Pharaoh put him in charge of this. Joseph also oversaw storing up food for the severe drought that God showed Pharaoh was coming. Joseph displayed remarkable wisdom in the way he oversaw the rationing of the food. Pharaoh also gave Joseph a wife. And we read how they had two sons. He called the oldest Manasseh, which I read means forgetting. He's forgetting his past. He's looking ahead. He's not holding on to those wrongs in his life. The second son was called Ephraim. This name means twice fruitful. It appears Joseph enjoyed a pretty good life for those years. He was in charge of storing up food. He was given that responsibility. The Bible tells us he was right up next to Pharaoh in the kingdom. Lots of responsibilities, and I think he handled them very, very well. Remember this time that he spent growing, maturing, and now I think the Egyptians saw him shine. For 7 years, there was lots of crops, and Joseph stored up so much food that we can read they couldn't even keep track of it all. I wonder if Joseph suspected his brothers might show up looking for food. I think he understood what happens in a drought. I don't know if they knew how widespread the drought was, but when something like this happens, they were all in the same shoes. They got hungry. They needed food. I'd like to think he was expecting them to show up. I'm sure people from all over started coming, and the Egyptians realized this drought is very widespread. And one day, they came. I think Joseph, I'm assuming he had people under him that were taking care of the Egyptians on a systematic basis. You came and got your food. Joseph didn't oversee all that every day. But when strangers came, when foreigners came looking for food, we're told Joseph met with his brothers. Can you imagine the emotions that coursed through his body when he saw these men come walking in there? He was looking like an Egyptian. I'm convinced they had no idea who he was. He saw those guys. I tell you, that would have been hard. Joseph also showed a lot of wisdom in the way he tried the brothers. I think he was looking to see if they were still the same bunch of irresponsible rebels he knew as a child. 13 years had changed a lot of things. Did they learn anything? Are these still the same men they were? We know the story, how he sent them home with food and kept the one brother in prison. We also know how he gave them their money back and told him Benjamin had to come back and ask about his father. These brothers must have wondered, why is he asking all these questions? Looking back, we could say, didn't you connect the dots? Where did you send Joseph? But I don't think Joseph looked anything at all like a Hebrew. And he used an interpreter as well. So they did not suspect who he was. They came back the second time, and they had Benjamin. And we know the story there, how they almost lost it when they realized how they were set up again. They went back, and they begged and pleaded. I think Judah was the spokesperson by now, and he stood up and explained to Joseph what they did, confessed their sins, what they did to him. And Joseph saw a change of heart in these brothers. and he forgave his brothers. He saw the change. Let's look at the way Joseph forgave his brothers. Certainly we can learn a lot here as well. Turn to Genesis 45. We'll read part of the chapter here where Joseph makes himself known. Genesis 45, verse 1. Then Joseph could not restrain himself before all those who stood by him. And he cried out, "Make everyone go out from me." So no one stood with him while Joseph made himself known to his brothers. I think Egyptian culture dictated that he was a man of composure. He had to hold it together. He had to be, his form was perfect. And he realized he is losing his composure here. And he wanted the Egyptians gone. Verse 2 says, so he wept aloud, and the Egyptians and the house of Pharaoh heard it. Then Joseph said to his brothers, "I am Joseph. Does my father still live?" But his brothers could not answer him, for they were dismayed in his presence. My guess is the word dismayed is not a very good description of what went through them when he told them this. They were probably shocked. And Joseph said to his brothers, "Please come near to me." So they came near. Then he said, "I am Joseph, your brother, whom ye sold into Egypt. But now, do not therefore be grieved or angry with yourselves because ye sold me here. For God sent me before you to preserve life. For these 2 years the famine has been in the land, and there are still 5 years in which there will be neither plowing or harvesting. And God sent me before you to preserve a posterity for you in the earth and to save your lives by a great deliverance. So now it was not you that sent me here, but God, and he has made me a father to Pharaoh and a lord of all his house and a ruler throughout all the land of Egypt. Hurry and go up to my father and say to him, 'Thus says your son Joseph, God has made me lord over of all Egypt. Come down to me, do not tarry. You shall dwell in the land of Goshen, and you shall be near to me, you and your children and your children's children, your flocks and your herds and all that you have. There I will provide for you, lest you and your household and all that you have come to poverty, for there are still 5 years of famine. And behold, your eyes and the eyes of my brother Benjamin see that it is my mouth that speaks to you. So ye shall tell my father of all my glory in Egypt and of all that you have seen, and you shall hurry and bring my father down here.' Then he fell on his brother Benjamin's neck and wept, and Benjamin wept on his neck. Moreover, he kissed all his brothers and wept over them, and after that his brothers talked with him." Joseph had decided what he was going to do before this moment. He had it all planned out. I just love the references he made to God in verse 5, "For God sent me before you to preserve life." And in verse 7, "God sent me before you to preserve a posterity for you in the earth and to save your lives by a great deliverance." We can't help but draw parallels here to Jesus coming to save our lives and the injustices that he went through as well on earth. But back to Joseph. He was not blaming them at all. By this point, he had realized that God wanted him there in the exact time that he had him there. We can't help but realize that the time he went through in prison was probably spent preparing for this time. His brothers had a bit of a hard time accepting this, and they were still a little fearful that he was going to take it out on them yet. And he reassured them later on that he does not have any ill intent. "Please, please go get your families and my father and bring him here." His heart was crying out to be reunited with his father. They didn't have telephones and instant messaging back then, so these brothers had plenty to talk about on the way home. Who do you suppose told Jacob? And what was his response? I think his first response was, no, I don't believe you guys. And then finally, he started to hold on to the thought that maybe they're right. Maybe I want to go see him. Let's go. And so they all went to Egypt with Joseph. Wrapping it up here a bit, what are some takeaways from the life of Joseph? Number one, God is sovereign. Always was and always will be. He timed events in Joseph's life with remarkable accuracy. We serve the same God today. Do we ever question God's timing? I know I have. Why, God? Why now? Our hearts cry out. This is not right, God. Why? But let's never, never forget that God is sovereign. Joseph learned to wait. Do we need to wait today? We become impatient. We rush ahead. We push our way through, and then we sit back and watch it all play out, and we say, oh, if I would have just waited, if I could just do that over again. Let's learn to wait on God. God has a plan, and God will work it out. Joseph learned to trust God. By this point, Joseph trusted God with his entire life. Joseph had no reserves in trusting God. Are we there? Can we do that? God will never leave us or forsake us. I know sometimes we get a little discouraged with life. This past week was one of those times for me. So many things just didn't work like I thought they should. And they weren't just big things. But after a while, you become frustrated with why? Why does this just not go? You know? We start to question God. What are you thinking? I've had all I can take. I'm about ready to snap. Is there value in those times? I think we can learn. We can snap, and we can lose it. Or we can say, okay, God, what are you trying to teach me? I showed up at a shipper this week after some frustrating times, and I was there on time. I was right on time. I walk in, and those of you that are familiar with the way a truck driver does things, we checked in. We talked with someone, and we wrote our information down, and what are you doing here? Well, I'm here to pick up this load. Don't have anything for you. Okay, by this time I was pretty damn meaty. I just didn't say much. I said, okay, so what do I tell the broker? Well, just tell him there ain't nothing here. I turn around and he's like, go ahead, sign in. He goes, I'll load you. You're supposed to be here yesterday. Well, I didn't know that, but I just booked the load this morning and here I am. So I went out and waited till it was my turn and backed in, and you would have thought there was a new man in there. It's the same man. He wanted to visit. He wanted to chat. What was the point in all of that? I mean, I just about snapped. I don't know. I don't know what God, why he allows those details in our lives. I trust you guys find it as that way sometimes as well, where it's just, why? God is sovereign. God has a reason for everything. Jeremiah 29, verse 11. For I know the thoughts that I think toward you, saith the Lord, thoughts of peace and of evil, to give you an expected end. Deuteronomy 31, 6. Be strong and of good courage, fear not, nor be afraid of them. For the Lord thy God, he it is that doth go with thee. He will not fail thee, nor forsake thee. James chapter 1, verse 2, my brethren, count it all joy when ye fall into various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience. But let patience have its perfect work, that ye may be perfect and complete, lacking nothing. That, I think, is the reason we find ourselves in those, can be the reason we find ourselves in those trying times. And sometimes we feel that they're just, it's just kind of small. I mean, But I think it's the small things where we can find the... It's life, folks, it's life. We don't do big things every day. But it's the small things that prepare us for the big things God has coming for us. I trust this story of Joseph was an inspiration to you. I know it was for me. I'm not sure why I was drawn to this story after some of the experiences I had this week, but I was blessed with knowing that God is sovereign. Learning again, God is sovereign. There's a reason we go through these circumstances. Let's submit to God's plan for our lives. And let's be okay with hurting for a while. Being frustrated has a way of drawing us to God out of desperation. God, what do you want me to do? It puts us in a good spot if we let it. Or it can also break us. Turn us into bitter people. Let's not be those kind of people that respond negatively. Let's stand for prayer. Heavenly Father, thank you for today. Thank you for your word that is never old. Thank you for the story of Joseph. God, I pray that we can take this story and apply it in our lives. Remember that you are sovereign and you care about us. You care about small details in our lives. God, I just trust you in our lives. I pray that you would go with us this week as we do life, as we face these trying times sometimes. I pray that we would cry out to you for wisdom, for strength. I pray that you would go with us, keep us safe, lead, guide, and direct us, we pray in Jesus' name. Amen.